You are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
This week we're in Ourgate.
Where are we, Lionel?
We're in the Rafa Cafe in Harrogate.
How many takes
cafe.
Did that take?
It's been a long day, Richard. I got very cold and wet out there, and I'm just sort of rebooting now.
You need a hat, Lionel. Keep your hat. Head warm. Like.
I need some new shoes. I trod in quite a deep puddle up at the mix zone this evening when you threw me a bit of a hospital pass.
Well, we've had the under 23 men's time trial, the women's time trial. We'll be putting out an episode of the Cycling Podcast Femina tomorrow morning, and that will have a lot about the women's time trial in it, and some interviews. We're going to talk about it as well. We're here with Rob Hatch as well.
Hello.
Hello, Rob.
How are you?
I had to rush off at the end of the women's time trial because I was doing an event here at Rafa with Kasia Nivyadoma and Rob. Kasia Nivyadoma, the Canyon SRAM rider, who is riding for Poland on Saturday in the road race. We'll hear a little bit from that event a bit later on.
She was great.
She was brilliant, wasn't she? Really enjoyed listening to her.
Really interesting and definitely one of the favourites for Saturday's road race, I think. She was interesting on the Dutch team as well. Lionel, do you want to give us a little... tell us what happened in the under-23 time trial, first of all.
Well, Richard...
It's been a day dominated by weather, hasn't it, really?
It really has. It's been extremely wet today. I feel bad starting this podcast complaining about getting one wet right foot. Well, I've only got one right foot, but getting my right foot wet. But I was submerged up to ankle depth in water.
Oh, you poor thing, Lionel.
I know. They had to close the fan zone up at the finish line today at around about noon because it was just waterlogged up there. And that was a real shame. I think, you know, there's this kind of stoicism about the atmosphere around town today and a real hope that the weather forecast is going to be... or the weather is going to be better for the next few days. I think tomorrow will be actually all right. And hopefully, although we'll hear from Dean Downing a little bit later, but one of the things he was saying was that, you know, the Yorkshire weather is unpredictable. You can't really, even with the forecast, you can't necessarily say that the rain has set in until it's set in. But it really did set in today, didn't it? And
how's your right foot? Is it recovering?
It's still damp. It's still damp, Richard. I've changed my sock, but the shoe is the shoe. It's the Gazelles, the Adidas Gazelles on
They're
the
Panu
Bay stage.
Get rid of them
again.
You need some newspaper, don't you?
I do.
Tomorrow morning, it'll be dry.
Perfect. The old method.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I'm a confidence player, aren't I, Rich? You know, a damp foot can really upset my level of performance here. I feel bad complaining because obviously I came off much less badly.
You didn't have to go swimming like half the riders did.
No, there were a couple of really bad crashes, weren't there, in the men's under 23 time trial this morning. The weather was bad. There was a lot of standing water on the course. We saw a couple of riders aquaplaning and somersaults, no two ways about it. And the Danish rider who went under the water and came up as if he'd jumped into the shallow end of the swimming pool. It was quite extraordinary.
Deep end.
Or the deep end, even. Mikkel Bjerg of Denmark won the under 23 time trial for the third year in a row. And, well, he's quite a talent, isn't he? And he will be riding professionally for UAE Team Emirates next year, as will the bronze medalist Brandon McNulty of the USA. He's been riding with the rally team this year, had some really great results in the spring. I actually spoke to him at Flesh Wallonne earlier on in the spring, but we didn't play that. In any of the podcasts for some reason. I don't know why. We'll have to dig it out.
Play it some lost in the archives waiting to appear in an episode of Auntie's Bloomers in 10 years or something like that.
Well, no, there's no bloomers about it. I mean, he's clearly a big talent.
It was an excellent interview.
Clearly a big talent. And he was one of two Americans on the podium because the silver medalist was Ian Garrison of the USA as well. But Bjerg's winning margin, 26 seconds, was impressive. But then, the story of the day is how well Chloe Dygert-Owen of the USA did in the women's time trial. I mean, she absolutely blew the field away, didn't she, Rich?
Well, there was talk of the women's time trial not happening, or then it was delayed because the weather was so bad, and there were parts of the course that were very dangerous, and they actually cordoned them off for the women. It was an astonishing performance by her. You know, Annemiek van Vleuten has won the last two World Time Trial Championships. Anna van der Breggen, that's the fourth time she's finished second in the time trial. And, you know, they weren't just beaten, they were hammered. I mean, van der Breggen was a minute and a half down, van Vleuten almost 2 minutes down. That was inconceivable. I mean, she's been winning time trials by that sort of margin at the Giro Rosa and so on. And what's fascinating about it is just that Chloe Dygert-Owen, you know, she's a very good track rider. She won the junior road and time trial titles in 2015. She's 22 years old. And she doesn't race much against these riders, you know. She races in America for an American team, and she's combining track as well. So she was a real unknown coming to the race, although she won four stages of the Colorado Classic recently. You know, she's not, doesn't race regularly against these other riders. So it was a fascinating kind of matchup.
Yeah, I think only in terms of what we're seeing now on the road, a lot of riders will have known and heard about her and her performances on the track. They knew she was coming. They heard about what happened in the Junior World Championships previously, but this was a performance that blew everybody away. And I think I'm right in saying, somebody might know a little better, but I'm pretty sure that that's the biggest winning margin in a time trial in any of the elite time trials that we've ever had since the event started 25 years ago. And it solidified the United States place as the most successful nation ever in winning elite women's time trials. I think it's seven now since they won the first one in 1994.
That's right. Karen Kurek won in Agrigento in Sicily in 94, the first time that there were individual time trials in the World Championship. Chris Boardman won the men's title that year. I'm almost certain that's right. That's right, isn't it, Rich?
What year, sorry?
94. Chris
yes.
Boardman. But the other American winners since then, Marie Holden in 2000 in Plouay. I was there. Don't remember that. I remember the fact that Jenny Longo was beaten, which was quite a story at the time. The great French rider who, well, she won pretty much everything multiple times. Other Americans, Kristen Armstrong a couple of times, and Amber Nabhan, of course.
Who coaches Chloe Dygert-Owen?
That's right. And Amber Nabhan, who's won twice, who was fourth today. I was going to say just off the podium, but actually the gap was big. It was 45 seconds or so. But a really impressive performance. And, well, we'll hear from Chloe Dygert-Owen in the episode of the Cycling Podcast Feminine, which will be out either late tonight or tomorrow. But she did make that point, Rich, about not really knowing the level where she'd slot in against these riders because she's not really raced this kind of level on the road for a couple of years. But you mentioned about the question marks over whether the women's time trial would even go ahead this afternoon. I gather that there weren't serious discussions about cancelling or postponing simply because it would have made the scheduling even more complicated tomorrow. But they did do quite an impressive job of cleaning up the course. We'll hear from Dean Downing in the next part, who's one of the drivers for the commissaires. And, well, the fire brigade came out and pumped the road. The water company were out pumping water off the road. And they did manage to put cones out to warn riders to keep off in the two really difficult parts. It was on the right hand side.
Out of the deep end.
Keying them out of the deep end. But Chloe Dygert and Annemiek van Vleuten both didn't make anything of the fact that there was, you know, a change to the rhythm and routine of the afternoon. It was the same for everyone. And Chloe Dygert made a very good point that, you know, she races on the track. She's well used to having a final coming up that might be delayed because of extra heats in other events and what have you. So, but they did have to adapt to some pretty challenging conditions out there.
The fastest clothing in the World Tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Ratha in 2019 as they partner EF Education First and Canyon SRAM.
Thank you very much to Ratha. And we're in the Ratha pop-up here in Harrogate, which is very, very nice. It's big, isn't it? Over two floors, three floors?
Two and a half, three floors. Yeah,
good.
Sort of we're on a...
There's a mezzanine. There's a mezzanine.
That's the word
if we were estate agents, this would be a well-presented mezzanine.
deceptively spacious.
There's some world champions jerseys on the wall, which is a nice touch. Obviously, the rainbow band's very well represented. What have we got there? We've got Vasyl Kiryenka's time trial rainbow jersey there. We've got a Wiggins jersey. I'm not sure where that would be
fake,
from.
Fake.
Madison. That was from the Madison.
Sorry. Apologies.
Very good. Well done, Rob. And the Yorkshire edition Rafa jersey, quite a fetching checkerboard sort of design.
Yeah, it would be better if it had the red rose on it, obviously, but even as a Lancashire, I've got to say that's not a bad jersey.
And Richard's wearing the hat from that collection as well. I mean, yeah, yes. I mean, it's a nice hat.
Thank you.
He looks rather silly in it.
Thanks, guys. So we were here earlier with Kasia Nevidoma and you, Rob, and I gather the Kanya SRAM team who are competing on Saturday in the Women's Road Race are all going to be here on Saturday night. And I think they've got other riders coming out. Mandy Jones, the World Road Race Champion in 1982, is coming here tomorrow night.
And it's going to be the victory party, isn't it? Because Kasia Nevidoma has already told us what the podium will be. She knows already.
She's going to win alone on Saturday. And Lizzie Dagnan is going to be second. And Annemiek van Vleuten third. Is that correct? That was correct. Yeah, that's going to be her podium. She's even drawn that in her journal. She's drawn the podium with her on the top step. So she's also been watching Michał Kwiatkowski's win at the 2014 World Championships in Ponferrada for inspiration the last couple of days. She loves the circuit. Watch out for her. We'll hear a little bit from our event at the end of tonight's episode and her reaction to Chloe Dygert's win.
Well, just on Chloe Dygert, one thing we didn't mention in the first part is I think that Seb Piquet tweeted this, that her time was good enough, would have been good enough to put her in 12th place in the men's under 23. And of course, she's under 23 herself. So, I mean, that's a really interesting comparison. And it just shows you the level that she's operating at there.
It was an amazing ride. I mean, she beat World Tour pros. She beat Mark Hershey. She beat riders who've signed for World Tour teams next year. Really remarkable.
And it continues what we've been talking about, the theme of this season, really. You're talking, she's an under 23 rider. She's another young rider who's come through to the very top and beaten established professionals. We're talking about two superstars who are there just beneath her on the podium, Anne van der Breggen and Annemiek van Vleuten, Olympic champions, world champions. She's beaten the very best and by the biggest margin ever. Be wary, everybody.
Do tune in to the Cycling Podcast Femina, which will be released tomorrow morning. We'll hear from Chloe Dygert, Annemiek van Vleuten, a very emotional Ashley Moulman-Passio, Audrey Cordon-Rigaud, Hayley Simmons, very interesting on how the delay and the questions over whether the race would go ahead affected her warm-up. You know, she's very dialed in terms of needing to finish her warm-up at a certain time and, you know, very interesting. So that will be released, I think, tomorrow morning. Lionel. There's also an interview in that with William Fotheringham about his new book on Beryl Burton. And Rose Manley and I look ahead to the road race on Saturday. Shall we hear from Dean Downing?
Yeah. Dean Downing, national crit champion back in the day, stalwart of the Premier Calendar, decent track rider as well, and
Yorkshire cycling royalty.
Yorkshire cycling royalty, along with his brother Russell.
Shared a broom wagon with him once.
Did you?
At the Lands Classic, I think it was called, in Hull, so not far, East Riding.
Wow.
In 1999, I believe.
Well, he's driving one of the commissaires during all of the races, and the commissaires had a pretty tricky job today because there was a lot of catching going on, and that's where in the time trials the commissaires are keeping their eyes open for any illegal drafting and what have you, and also the logistical challenges with regard to suddenly the women's race, the time gaps between the riders were changed from a minute and a half to a minute. So it really ups, everyone had to adapt very quickly. I think, they can't legislate for the weather, obviously. I mean, I have seen a few comments on Twitter about, well, this is bound to happen if you have a World Championships in the north of England in late September.
July in the Alps in the Tour de France, August in Spain and Andorra. Ah, come on.
Quite right, Rob, yes. Dean Downing's driving the commissaires, and I wanted to get a sense from him about what the conditions were like for not just the under 23 men but also for the women this afternoon, but also just pick his brains a little bit about what it means to have the World Championships here in Yorkshire 37 years after the Road World Championships were last held in the UK. Well, Dean, this is good Yorkshire weather, isn't it, today?
Yep, welcome to Yorkshire. Yeah, it's been a bit grim today. We just finished the women's race, and it's actually better than it was for the U23s. Yeah, a lot of standing water. I've been driving Commissaire cars all week. I think most people would see on social media there was quite a few crashes. I think a Danish guy hit one of the, like, yeah, just aquaplaned himself into the puddle. Yeah, so yeah.
Would you have trained in this?
Never, not a chance. I used to hate the rain, and yeah, to be fair, most people wouldn't train in this nowadays. There's quality indoor training sessions you can do nowadays, but yeah, it's the World Championship, so they can't say, "Oh, I'm not going to ride, boss," to the DS and the manager of the national team. So yeah, the lads got on with it. The women got on with it.
I mean, it was borderline this morning, though, wasn't it, with the standing water on the course? Because I guess people didn't know, no one knew until they got out onto the course just how bad it was.
Yeah, that's right. So we, as a Commissaire driver, I was out in the first wave on the under-23s. We were behind the rider number three on the road, and we were shocked at how bad the lines for the race were. Big standing water puddles, and as the Commissaire who I was driving for was relaying that back to other commissaires who were behind, and it was just, yeah, it was pretty biblical rain for that race.
Was there any way to convey that to the riders, or were they just finding the conditions as they came to them?
So how it works, the commissaires go on to radio tour then, and they can radio tour that, they can say that back, so all teams who are in vicinity can hear that. And then Seb Piquet's in charge of radio tour, so he relays that. You know, be careful, kilometre 8, there's a large puddle on the left-hand side of the road, for example. So that's how that happens. But yeah, we did the U23 race. Commissaires had a meeting about the results and things, and then we all turned around as a convoy of 5-6 vehicles who were driving for the commissaires. The head commissaire was there, and we retraced the route, you know, on closed roads to see how bad it had got. And there was one at 8 kilometres from the start that was across the road, and it was, like, you know, over ankle deep. There was people from, like, the water board there trying to do things, and one of the UCI managers, Vincent, he was on the phone, and from what I understand, that's why it was delayed, and they got the fire brigade in to pump it, so all the teams would have been told about that. We set off again. We're in the women's car 3 or rider 3. We got to 8 kilometres in, and it was gone. So that's pretty good from an organising point of view, that in a half an hour they've turned it round from being, you know, a foot deep across the road to clear. So,
especially as it's rained non-stop. I mean, it didn't stop raining between the under-23 men's race and the women's race, and it's rained constantly all afternoon as well. So to get the roads as clear as they were for the women's race, a pretty impressive effort, really.
Yeah, and that's a view. The organisers as a whole, you've got, like, UCI Sporting, who then relay it safety-wise, and then you've got the police are here, and they get in contact with the fire brigade, I guess. And, yeah, within a half an hour, the main obstacles on that 40k 30k course were just gone, and that's pretty impressive that the ladies still had to ride in the rain, but they all got on with it. Some fantastic times. So
did it come close to being postponed this afternoon? I mean, they delayed by about 40 minutes, I think, but were the commissaires talking about possibly postponing and trying tomorrow morning instead?
Not that I heard of anything like that, no. I've not been on social media much because in the cars and stuff, but I didn't hear of anything like that. I just had a WhatsApp from in a group that we're in for drivers to say that it's been delayed until 3:30. So, yeah, I was around the start. I didn't hear any news of that sort. So, you might have done, I don't know.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton. Cycling Podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
Well, that's Seb Piquet, the voice of Radio Tour at the Tour de France, interrupting our episode to remind us on this occasion to tell you that this episode is sponsored by Lacquer. Lacquer is a specialist bicycle insurance company with a difference. Your premiums are based on the claims made by members of the community each month. So if there are no claims, there's no premium. Lacquer says their members have saved on average 61% insuring their bikes and equipment with them. And premiums are also capped, so there can't be any unwelcome surprises. Lacquer cover your bikes and equipment from theft, damage, travel abroad, and Also, they'll cover you in races and sportives as long as you're not a professional rider. And because LACA serves a community of cyclists, they know what they're covering and how to replace your bikes and gear when something goes wrong. So let's hear from Jens Hartvig, one of the founders of LACA, who can tell us what happens when a LACA customer has to make a claim and how they can get you back on the road quickly.
So the moment you sign in into our website and basically just submit the claim, upload a video of yourself quickly telling us what happened, telling us where and when. From our side, we are then just really looking, okay, what happened to the bike? Are there any deadlines for you? Are you having a holiday coming up where we really need the bike for? And then we're really looking at like, what is the best solution for you as a member of the community, and what's the best outcome for the community overall? Because we are basically the middleman, so to speak, to get the best outcome for everyone. So let's say, classic example, you crashed on a race, your right shifter and your right rear mech is broken, and now you want to get those replaced. We would usually work with a local shop to get you these parts and get them fitted as fast as possible. On average, that's usually around less than 7 days, and you're back on the road.
So if you'd like to join LACA's community and save on your insurance, go to LACA.co.uk. That's LACA.co.uk, spelled LACA.co.uk.
Well, we heard before the break there from Dean Downing, who's got an important job this week. Just had an email from the UCI, Lionel. Last night we stepped outside at about 7:20 from Betty's, our usual residence in Betty's, and it was really quite dark, and we realised that the men's under 23 road race.
It was dark.
The men's under 23 road race on Friday was scheduled to finish around about that time, or just after seven. And we thought, are they gonna have lights, or you know, what are they gonna do? It's properly dark. I've just had an email that they've changed the start time 10 minutes earlier. It will start, and one lap of the Harrogate circuit has been removed. This is, you know, there's nothing you can do about the weather, but this is staggering that this was scheduled for, you know, everybody knows when it gets dark.
But do you know why the under 23 road race has to be so late? It's because of where it starts, and all of the vehicles have all got, well, Seb was talking about this, have all got to get back out after the finish of the morning's race, got to get back out there to the start. It's about an hour and a quarter away, and you've got to build in a bit of time there. But you're absolutely right. This is supposed to be
basic, guys.
The under 23s, the pinnacle of their season, and now they're racing a shorter distance than they thought they were.
If it is wet, I know, and if it is wet, imagine how dangerous it could be in failing light.
Dickie Bird lives down the road. Get his light meter out. Headingley's not far away, is it? You know that after 6 p.m. you can't bowl your fast bowlers at Headingley. There's four lights on the board. Come on, guys, sort it out.
I don't know what you're talking about,
this
Rob.
This is a cricket reference, Richard.
You know, they know what they're talking about around here, don't they?
Just imagine, Richard, you know, when it gets to a certain darkness, it's very, very unsafe to toss the caber. So just in case, because no one will be able to see where it lands. It's very similar, very similar.
It's too dark.
Oh, dear.
God, that sounded almost Flemish.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. Anyway, moving on. Time trial tomorrow. Men's time trial. What do we expect from that?
Well, ordinarily, you would say Rowan Dennis is going to repeat his victory from last year, wouldn't you? I mean, he was impressive last year. Big winning margin over Tom Dumoulin, 1:21. And Victor Campenaerts was very close to Dumoulin. But Rowan Dennis hasn't raced since the really strange and unusual withdrawal from the Tour de France on the stage to Bagnères de Bigorre, where he effectively downed tools for whatever reason. And we've winkled out a little bit of information about what was wrong there. Dissatisfaction with the kit, the bikes, and all the rest of it. We do gather from our moles and spies that there won't be an awful lot of Bahrain Merida branding on any of his kit or bike. It'd be really interesting to see whether there's even a logo on his skin suit, or you know, and what bike he's on. But we understand that he's raring for it, ready to go. And I wouldn't put it past him repeating just on sort of, you know, willpower and a determination to get back in the saddle after what must have been quite an unusual and difficult few months for him.
Yeah, the talk is the power numbers are better than ever. The people around him think that he is going to do it. We know that he's focused on it because this is the only thing that's left in his season. As you mentioned, he hasn't raced since we wondered where he'd gone on that day at the Tour de France. We know he's a great operator, a hugely talented athlete. And when he focuses on something, when he gets the mental aspect right, he is one of the top athletes in the discipline that I think we've ever seen. Rowan Dennis, we're told up for it, and I guess we've got to believe that.
But what I'm really looking forward to seeing is how Remco Evenepoel does for Belgium. I mean, they've got Kampenaerts, Victor Kampenaerts and Evenepoel, both potential medalists. People are sort of saying, well, Evenepoel, you know, maybe top five, maybe on the podium, but who knows? I mean, this time last year, he was riding in the junior events and he won both of them. Last year, he won junior road race and time trial at national, European and world level. This year he won the senior European time trial championships in Alkmaar, beat Kasper Asklin, his trade teammate of course, and Eduardo Affini, who also won the time trial at the Tour of Britain a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, there's pedigree there, and I gather that Evenepoel will have a new specialised bike as well, which they're very excited about. And, we'll have to see how he does. But I think a medal is not out of the question.
Another guy who's been very vocal in saying, I am feeling better than ever. And he's not always been that confident, certainly publicly. With regards to Kampenaerts, if the weather continues to be like it is, his girlfriend's a swimmer, so I might be getting some tips.
I was going to do a siren noise there for the slight misstep on the pronunciation there, Rob.
Bit of a cock up there, sorry.
You know, I mean, there's nothing worse than a corrupt policeman, is there? But when you look at the start list and the back end of it, I mean, we've got the in reverse order, you know, Dennis is off last as defending champion. Kampenaerts, Primoz Roglic, how will he come out of the Vuelta? Will he have done too much? Askreen, Oliveira, Hager, Stefan Kung, Tony Martin, Jonathan Castroviejo. I mean, lots of riders who were up there in the top 10 last year. So we could be looking at a fairly similar sort of result as we had last year. I suppose from last year's top 10, the big absentee is Mikhail Kwiatkowski, who was fourth, well off the podium, but was fourth last year. But I can't see further than, well, I hate predictions anyway, but Dennis,
Roglic,
Evenepoel.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science in Sport for their support of the Cycling Podcast. And if you want to stock up on all your sports nutrition products, go to scienceofsport.com and at the checkout, enter the code SISCP25. Thank you indeed to Science in Sport. Very grateful to them.
Do they have waterproof gels for Thursday's ride that we're doing, the World Championships?
Waterproof gels. They come in waterproof packets.
They do.
Lionel,
they
do. So don't worry about that. You'll be fine. Now, chaps, something completely different. I met this morning with a guy called Mike McSherry, who is running an art project in Bradford, where the women's road race starts on Saturday. And while he explains it better than I can, let's hear all about the art project that's running in Bradford and also a special offer to listeners of the Cycling Podcast.
I'm Michael McSherry. I'm from The Open Wheel. And this week, to coincide with the World Championships in Bradford, we've got an exhibition called Welcome to Goma, which is at the Theatre and Mills new venue in Centenary Square.
How did this come about?
The Open Wheel is me and my brother Brendan and Finn, and we've been running a sports eve in Yorkshire called the West Riding Classic since 2010. And in 2016, we read about this club, Goma Cycling Club, in an article, and we really liked them, and we thought, well, maybe if we raise a small amount of money through our sportif, that might be useful for them. So we got in touch and they said yes, please. And since then we've just had a relationship with them, and they're really, really sound, really, really brilliant cycle club doing amazing stuff out in Goma. And to be honest, I didn't know anything about Goma until I read it. I didn't know where it was, what the circumstances were. I didn't know there was a volcano there or this enormous lake, or that it was on the border of Rwanda, or that there was a million refugees, or I just didn't know anything about it. But now, through this cycling connection, us as cyclists and them as cyclists, I've got to know all about the place, and I've got to know them, and they're just really, really, really cool people doing good stuff. So in December 2018, we sent out some camera equipment to them, and then since then they've been interviewing themselves and filming various bits and pieces, and we've edited that into a 10-minute documentary, and we've also created this virtual reality experience to complement it, which is what the basis of this exhibition.
You're saying that, you know, the volcano is obviously a big part of life there, and it's still a threat to, you know, that comes across in the film, that it might erupt again, but they are the road network. Can you explain the extent of the road network and you know, the looking at the virtual reality thing in the film, you know, there's kind of rubble all around, so there's constant reminders, I guess, of the volcano.
Yeah, I think there's a few things that would sort of define the narrative of the place as understood by us in like the north, and that is that it's an area of extreme levels of conflict and poverty and environmental jeopardy. So from the conflict point of view, we're all familiar with like the Rwandan genocide, but after the Rwandan genocide there's subsequently been a number of wars, and those collectively have created 1 million refugees, and that's basically the population of Goma. On top of that, you've got political instability, and you've got in the film, Charlie Guy, who's the founder of the club, talks about the fact that 70 or more armed groups in the region around Goma. And then you've also got this incredible volcano, which has already erupted twice in the last like 15 years and could erupt at any minute, and is extremely powerful. It's the sort of thing that you would think is so phenomenal as like a piece of the Earth's planet that you'd think it's be famous and we'd all know about it, but I don't know about you, but I'd never heard about it. So they live in the shadow of all these things, but what really comes across when you get to know them, and hopefully comes across in the film, and hopefully comes across in the VR experience and the portraits that they've made, is they're not defined by any of these things. They are really defined by their own personality and their own ambitions, and they've got... they're really, really nice people, and they've got big dreams, and they've got big hearts, and they love cycling, and it turns out they're really good at it as well. So that's kind of the context of which they live in. In respect to the road specifically, there are only about 20 kilometres of tarmac road in the whole of Goma, which is a city of 1 million people, and they're the roads that they use for training. Yeah.
And we see in the film big groups of cyclists. And Rwanda, you mentioned that there's a big cycling kind of culture in Rwanda, and in other parts, Eritrea as well. But I'm not sure, I didn't know that there was that existed in Congo as well. I mean, what do you know about that? Is that a historical thing? They obviously speak French. This is a French influence. I mean, where does it come from? Do you know?
Well, the bits in the film that I think you're referring to are actually in Rwanda. So when they compete in races, they go to Rwanda to compete, or they go to other African countries to compete. Sometimes to Kinshasa, the capital, but on the whole, they do their competitive racing in Rwanda. So obviously, in Rwanda, cycling is an enormous thing, and it's one of the impacts that this club have had on themselves and on the city is that they've really changed perceptions of themselves, for themselves, but also for others. So some of the members of the club also do duathlons, and there was a big duathlon competition in Rwanda, which is just literally 2 or 3 miles away from Goma, and they were competing and with international competitors from like California and wherever, Australia. And after the race, this was cut out of film, we didn't make it onto the film, but they were saying that it was brilliant because people were coming over to us and saying, I didn't know Congolese did running and swimming, and they were saying, here I am, I'm Congolese and I'm running and swimming. So it was like very real changing of perceptions that's been going on.
And what you describe what people experience in Bradford. I mean, what do you want to achieve this week? Are you getting people that live in Bradford to come along? Are people there for the World Championships? I mean, people are visiting Yorkshire for the Worlds. I guess you would like them to come along and experience it.
Oh, very much, yeah. We've been open since Saturday and we've had a fantastic response from the people in Bradford already. There's already been a few visitors coming through. Some people who know us from our rides have come specifically to come and see what we've been doing. But obviously, on Saturday, we've got the women starting in Bradford. And I think that's going to be a really fantastic event and day all around. And I think Bradford's going to be absolutely rammed. And we are really right on the start line. We're about 50 yards from the start line. The installation is in Bradford Centenary Square. It's a theatre in the mill. If you go to Centenary Square, you'll find it very easily. It's open 12 to 5 during the week. On Saturday for the women's racing, it's open 9 till 5. And also, we've got a special invite for subscribers of this podcast. If you'd like, we've got a breakfast opening on Thursday from 10:30 till 12. You're welcome to come to that. In terms of what we're trying to achieve, the whole installation is kind of a self-portrait made by the club. They've shot it, they've taken the photos, they've done the interviews, and we've edited it together in collaboration with them. And when the sort of working title for the whole installation when we were putting it together was The Art of Participation. And what we really feel, and I hope we've got it across, is that when you come together and you do stuff together and you get involved, that can lead to things changing for you and changing for your society in a good way. And not like any grand thing which is going to like change the world, but it can change your immediate experience positively. And hopefully that's what comes across. Hopefully it's fun. Hopefully it's uplifting. That's certainly our ambition.
So that's Mike McSherry there. All the best things about the World Championships, I think, a really fantastic international project showcasing a cycling club in the Democratic Republic of Congo, in a city called Goma, which I wasn't familiar with, but the right on the border with Rwanda, the riders, and there's lots of them. I watched the film that they've made, and big groups of bike riders on this 20-kilometer network of roads that they've got there. They race in Rwanda quite a lot, where we know there's a big cycling culture. So if you get a chance to go along to that in Bradford, go along and have a look, and especially Thursday morning or Saturday when the women's road race starts there.
Just looking ahead again to the time trial tomorrow, if Tony Martin were to get a medal of any colour, he would become the outright most meddlingest rider in the 25 and a bit year history of this discipline.
Won the most medals.
He would edge ahead of Fabian Cancellara. I mean, technically, on sort of count back, he's just ahead of Cancellara because he's got 4 golds, a silver and 2 bronze, whereas Cancellara's got 4 golds and 3 bronze, and he's unlikely to add to that tally, let's be
honest. Fading force, though, isn't he, Tony Martin? He's a fading force.
I thought you were going to say Cancellara's a fading
force. He's a faded force. Yeah. One little thing today, we were having lunch, the three of us, and a very, very generous podcast listener went and settled the bill for us without us knowing, and then he came to the table and said what he'd done, and we were very grateful. Also stunned.
We're all a bit stunned, weren't we? We didn't really know how to react. So sorry to Gary if we didn't engage in.
Gary was his name. Yeah. So Gary, if you're listening, get in touch because we'd like to offer you a little something as a thank you. That was a very kind thing to do. So thank you very much.
Extremely. I mean, had I known in advance, I'd have ordered more. No,
of course you would.
I'm joking.
No, you're not.
I had just the right amount.
Anyway, we should leave it there, fellas. We'll be back tomorrow. As I say, there's an episode of Cycling Podcast Femina coming out as well, imminently. I was going to play out with a little bit of Kasia Nevyedoma from earlier tonight. We were chatting in this very room in the Rafa pop-up in Harrogate. She's the one to look out for at the weekend. Let's hear a little bit from our event earlier.
She's not there now. Why are you looking? You're looking round just to where the future world champion was sitting.
It's
just
a
couple of hours
it's
ago.
It's a recent memory, Lionel. Let's hear from her now. Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Rob.
Thank you very much.
What do you make of the winner, though? I don't know if you've all caught up, but Chloe Dygert-Owen won by a minute and a half from Anna van der Breggen.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
It was outstanding performance. I was watching it and my jaw was just dropped, you know. I could not believe what was she doing, because I was convinced that Annemiek is going to win it, because she was unbeatable this year. She was just performing like a star, never disappointing. And I know that if she wants to be good at certain race, she can prepare herself very well. So watching Chloe just like going, I don't know, like a beast, you know, on her bike. She was looking so strong and her body was just looking perfect. And definitely I kind of started to fear her for the Saturday's race. I was like, oh, I kind of overlooked her, but...
Just don't let her get away
so
on her own.
Strong. Yeah. I just need to elbow her somehow.
Well, I mean, the interesting thing is that she obviously, you know, she's a track rider as well.
Yeah.
She doesn't race very often against you guys, World Tour races and so on. She doesn't race all that often on the road. So it's very difficult to know, to benchmark her, I suppose.
I would also say that right now, women's racing is kind of crazy because everyone is so nervous and stressful and everyone wants to be in the front. And of course here with those small roads and many corners, it's impossible that 150 girls will be in the front. So definitely you have to have those feelings that you usually get after spring classics. It's like you have to be feisty, you have to be like gutsy rider, you have to know that you have to just risk and you can't overthink. And if she wasn't racing any of those spring classics, it might be difficult for her to find herself in this peloton. And Worlds are also kind of special race because you have a lot of riders that normally do not race with us, like girls from countries that I even don't know how to call. I don't want to be rude. It's not like this. But like they don't have the right bike skills. So you really have to be cautious. Like you have to know that, okay, I cannot get stuck behind certain rider because then my race might be over. Mm. So it's like you can't be thinking only about the finish line because race start on one point and you have to be so concentrated and focused and like knowing where you are in the peloton and who's around you and then just like chase your dreams.
Do you enjoy that, or are you good at that fight, that battle for position?
It's so crazy because like right now when I sit here, I always feel like, oh no, it's so stressful, I don't like it. But the moment the start is given, I kind of change into this weird girl that really wanna be there and I don't care about anyone, I just wanna be there, you know? And you kind of get into this mood that you just like fight for yourself, that like nothing else matters, you know? You're just, it's like, oh, I want to be there, like, get out of my way, you know?
And who are the, I mean, I'm thinking probably Marina Voss and riders like that. Who are the best riders? Because as you say, these roads are quite tricky, technical, you know, who will that favor?
Marianne Voss, Lucinda Brand. She's such a great descender, and the way how she takes corners is just absolutely insane. I cannot follow her.
So you mentioned two Dutch riders there.
Yeah, again, Dutch is, yeah.
I mean, you've got Lucinda Brand, Marianne Voss, Annemiek van Vleuten, Anna van der Breggen, Chantal Black as well.
Yeah,
world
Amy
champion.
Peters.
Amy Peters, European champion. So which of those riders do you watch? You just watch all of them?
Yeah, or maybe none of them, you know? Yeah, I'm just like, I mean, there are a couple of good riders, not from Dutch Federation, like Lizzie or Ashley Mulman-Pascio. Elisa Longo-Borghini from Italy. So I do believe that there might be certain riders from a different countries, but we could start working together somehow. I mean, like, against a Dutch team. Because it's impossible to be responding to every single attack made from a Dutch federation. And maybe, like, this is my little hope, they might be working against of each other because each of them wanna win, girls
that
and we,
happen.
Yeah, and exactly. And we are girls, so girls, you know, right?